Local News, Culture, and NPR.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Local Edition. On a Friday evening, I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We have a packed show for you tonight, so let's get straight to it. In the second half of the show, we'll find out what the UFO Museum in Pine Bush is doing this weekend. And what's so special about this weekend? Well, Sunday is May 4th, which means it's Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. Get it? Get it? All right. And before we get into tonight's program, I'm sure you, if you have not heard, President Donald Trump has signed an executive order instructing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to end all federal funding for NPR and PBS, citing what he calls radical left bias in their coverage. The move, while likely to be challenged in court, raises significant concerns about the future of public broadcasting in America, especially here at the local level, where much of the federal support is felt. So to talk about this and how this could impact local stations like Radio Catskill, I have on the phone with us now Sally Stewart, Board President of Radio Catskill. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Patricio. Thank you for having me on. I'm glad to be with you.
So, Sally, can you start off by sort of sharing your reaction to this executive order? What was your initial thought when you first heard the news?
We've been expecting an order that would threaten funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And this is coming in a slightly different way than we anticipated. But it is the same effort, which is to defund community radio and television that serves the public interest. I think that, buried in the executive order is a statement that any CPB funds that go to radio stations would require them not to use it for purchasing programming for licensing fees to NPR. So while NPR's own budget relies only very slightly on funding from CPB, it does rely on funding from the stations. In our case, for example, Patricio, the funding from CPB represents 25% of our budget. So influencing how we could spend those monies could limit what we can do for the community and the services that we can provide.
I mean, you know, you said, I had another question. I think you sort of answered it already, but what kind of impact does federal funding actually have on local stations like Radio Catskill? Some might not realize how essential this support is. And go ahead. Can you sort of paint the picture?
Yeah. So Congress decided that funding for CPB should be granted 2 years in advance to protect journalism and community service from the winds of politics and give, greater certainty. And we had anticipated that the Trump administration would ask Congress to rescind funding that they had already approved. And they may still do that. We don't know. But we are public radio. Public radio includes government support. In Europe and other parts of the world, public broadcasting is wholly supported by government and is insulated from politics. It's a longstanding tradition. But in the United States, we do it differently. And it isn't all of our funding, but it is a big chunk. And radio stations all over the country rely on the support. You know, there are people in remote areas of Alaska that wouldn't know the weather without it. Wouldn't know, we are a source of emergency information. You know, when it's a public health situation, when it's a weather situation, when it's other kinds of situations. So people need to have access to this kind of information that's in the now. You know, newspapers and other sources are great, but they aren't as immediate as we are with local broadcasting.
Yeah. And, you know, just looking ahead, Sally, you know, what can listeners and supporters of public media and public radio stations like Radio Catskill do to ensure its future? Is there anything that sort of gives you hope right now?
Yeah. Our community relies on us and they support us, and that's essential. And we all have to do a little more, you know, to help make up for these changes. And the other thing we can do is that we can contact Congress. And there's a platform that makes it really easy called protectyourpublicmedia.org. And if you go there, you can contact your Congress people there. And also Congress people respond to telephone calls. It is a little, you know, tiresome to be on hold and all of that, but your call is logged and it is taken into consideration. So, you know, for folks in Sullivan County, I think a call to Josh Riley would be great. And for folks in Northeast Pennsylvania who listen to us, I hope you will call your congressman too. There's several out there. I actually have forgotten their names. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, also there is a survey on our website now that could tell us. Mm-hmm. We're asking folks to take a moment to fill it out and let us know what you know, a world without NPR will mean to you here and locally.
We have all sorts of local programming that folks rely on too, right? It's not just NPR. They rely on us for all sorts of local programming, which enrich our lives and connect us, right? What if you lost 25% of that? We need it.
Sally, again, thank you so much for talking to us and letting us know your thoughts on this executive order. I think a lot of us, we're talking to a lot of other public radio stations this morning to see what's their sort of plans and what sort of their messaging is. So it's really great to hear from you, the board president of Radio Catskill. So I do really appreciate it.
Thank you, Patricio. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you again, Sally Stewart. We were talking to Sally Stewart, board president of Radio Catskill, talking about the executive order given by President Donald Trump to defund NPR and PBS. So let's continue on with the show. It's Friday on the Local Edition, and every Friday we check in with the one and only Chris Rowley from the Schwankoek Journal. Chris, welcome back to the program. You have some more news from us about Tops Supermarket that has opened up in Ellenville. It's taken over the spot where ShopRite was. We recently interviewed ourselves, the CEO of Tops Supermarket, which folks can check out WJFFradio.org for that interview. But Chris, you're on the phone with us now to tell us about a hiring event that happened recently. What can you tell us?
They're hiring. They, on Monday, got the call early from Terry Hount, the supervisor. Thank you, Terry. And you know, jumped up and ran down there because they were there doing interviews and they had taken over the courtroom, which is where the town board meets and all the rest of it. And it was interesting to see. I got to talk to Mr. Culver. Ezra Culver is going to be the new store manager. And he's very friendly. Their PR and HR staff were there, and they were very nice as well. I just get a very good vibe from these folks, much more engaged with our area, our community, than I ever got from the ShopRite people. So it was really good that. And, you know, the work will really get going this week on the store itself, which is mostly empty, but there's still the shelves. The layout will be much the same. Mm. That is, there'll be fruit and vegetables at the front door, and then beer will be over in the far corner there.
I heard in an interview that we did with the CEO of Tops that there will be fresh fried donuts there.
Oh, my God. Yeah, there will be. I don't know that that's a great idea, but when Ellenville Regional Hospital conducts it every other week, they have a health tour of the local supermarkets, right? They get people who come and they walk them through the supermarket, pointing out the things that they should eat and not the things that they want to eat. I don't know about those donuts, but anyway, yeah, I'm sure it'll be popular. And they're gonna do a lot of other things. I believe they the idea of Tops Friendly Supermarkets is to try to understand the community that they're set up in and to cater themselves to that community a bit more than perhaps a Walmart or other stores do, you know. I don't know, that's my sense of it. And the business of Tops originated with a little neighborhood grocery store in Niagara Falls. It's fascinating that you've got to go into the background of these things. It was started up by Italian immigrants who came to New York in 1920 from a village outside Rome. And Armand Castellani is the name of the founder of the chain. And in the 1950s, he had an agreement with another Italian, Thomas Buscaglia, who owned a grocery equipment business. And that pairing is, I think, at the base of a lot of successful grocery stores, because you've got the guy who has all the equipment, the freezers and everything, and then you've got the guy who really knows the nuts and bolts and pennies and dimes of selling chicken and meats and then vegetables and canned goods and the rest of it. So anyway, they paired it up. And eventually they got the name Tops from a franchisee who came up with it. And they threw it around and talked about it, and then they just said they took it on themselves. So I thought it was really sweet. And they had their first modern supermarket in Niagara Falls in 1962, and it was a 25,000 square footer. That's the origin of Tops. Tops is coming to Elmville and will open, I believe, in June. And I think it's going to be, Mr. Culver, the new manager, told me it would be a kind of stealthy, quiet opening, with balloons and acrobats, whatever they're going to have, country band or something. Well, that will come later. But the first thing will be just to open and bring it back. Oh, and important, and we'll leave it with this, is that ShopRite Boulevard is no longer exists. It is now Tops Boulevard.
Oh, wow.
The transitory nature of nomenclature for a road, eh? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The Appian Way is still the Appian Way. Anyway, so that was the Monday morning, and it was very cheering, because losing the ShopRite was a big loss. It was a wound, and I believe all the businesses in our immediate area noticed they lost people. They lost a lot of business because people stopped doing that combination shop. You go somewhere to go to the supermarket, and then you go there, and you go there, and you have to get your hair cut and so on. And they weren't doing that because they were going somewhere else. We think this will be big for our little area.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for that and all the information about Tops Supermarket coming to Elmville. And maybe one day I could meet you there and we could try out one of their fresh fried donuts. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We'll learn all about May 4th weekend. May the 4th be with you. What's happening at the UFO Museum in Pine Bush. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to The Local Edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Arroyo. The UFO Museum in Pine Bush will kick off the spring season by celebrating May the 4th weekend, a celebration of Star Wars, where its fans can gather, celebrate together. But with the summer season approaching, the venue has other events in mind for fans interested in the unknown. The museum offers a comprehensive history of the devoted researchers who studied the phenomenon of UFOs, especially around the period of the 1980s. Pine Bush has been a hotbed for UFO sightings. Radio Catskill's Miguel Santiago Colon spoke to Lance Howell, the director of museum operations and special events, who starts by sharing how the museum got its start.
That is kind of an epic question to answer. The timeline is pretty interesting, actually. I had started the museum independently. I came up to work with the town to create something for the big Pine Bush UFO fair that happens every year. And there was a gentleman by the name of Dino Mavros who was willing to help me work with the town and provided a location that I put a very small version of what was the museum for the fair. And the attendance was really great. So started working closer with the town. Subsequently, they facilitated a location for me to work with them on this. And now the town owns the museum, and it's turned into quite the highlight for the area.
What do you encompass there? Like, what do you guys show in there? I'm curious.
Well, there's what's been funny is some people have asked, like, do you have pieces of a UFO in there? And I always say, do you know what the ticket price would be? And there'd be like military standing outside, you know, just like taking, you know, IDs and names, whoever comes in here. Basically it really comes down to, the researchers who have dedicated so many time, have dedicated so much time to, the research of the area. The '80s was a huge time for UFO sightings. And, at any given time there could be, they told me there was like 20 to 30 people, like just packs of, people going up and down the streets, kind of driving the cops crazy, cause the police had told me that they, find people just parking everywhere. And, so it was, whether the town liked it or not, it became a hotspot back in the '80s, and it just became adapted as part of the culture of the area.
You know, between UFO enthusiasts, like what is the major draw? Is there a certain piece or a certain, part of the museum that people are normally more attracted to?
Well, it's basically, the collective whole of everything. We have an exhibit called Why Pine Bush, and, it covers, some of the theories about the area. This all comes from, people like Dr. Bill Wyant, Linda Zimmerman, Vinnie Police, who had produced or published a book about Pine Bush. So just the people who were here from the inception of the research is presented. We think it's presented very well. The researchers who have put so much work into this, it's really, it's presented in a way that, everybody can appreciate, because a lot of people who do come in have either heard something about Pine Bush, or they're just like fresh to the whole UFO situation. It's good for, both demographics, And I got to tell you this, I brought this up before, when I was developing the, kind of some of the marketing stuff for the museum, I had come up with a little tagline that just said, experience the mysterious, and then, in the past couple of years with the congressional hearings about all the UFOs, I initially got pretty upset because I'm like, well, great. It's not going to be mysterious anymore. Nobody's going to care. But the fact is, actually, the people who were never paying attention to UFOs before are now seeing it on Fox and CNN, and it's now kind of commonplace to discuss UFOs. So it didn't backfire at all. It worked out great because now people are actually paying attention. So we still have the same tagline, but it's been an interesting trajectory for the museum.
It's spring is already here. I know you have a few events coming up, but this weekend you're starting off with a big event. Could you tell us what it is about?
Sure. So it's May the 4th be with you weekend. The main day of the event is Saturday, May 3rd. And we had actually partnered with a foundation called the Limkind Foundation, and they provide prosthesis for children that have had limb loss. They're actually international, but they are out of New York. And so it's a charity event, and we've been tracking the rain. As far as we can tell, it looks like it's starting to push away from everything we can. But there's a lot of, it's all Star Wars themed activities and stuff. We have youngling lightsaber training and blaster trooper, and there's an Ewok attack training. What's really interesting is we had gotten hooked up through the UFO fair with the 501st Legion. Have you ever heard about them?
No, I haven't, but could you tell us more?
Well, okay. So are you a Star Wars person? Or
I am. Yeah.
Okay. From the Pinebush UFO Fair, I had gotten connected with the 501st Legion, and they are a group who is actually sanctioned by Lucasfilm, and they show up in you know, various Star Wars themed costumes, you know, stormtroopers, and they have like a very strict regiment that they follow as far as, you know, what is being sanctioned by Lucasfilm, and they show up for all types of charities. They work with, you know, the May the 4th event for the in Yankee Stadium. They do charity events all over the place. So they have been a great assistance to our May the 4th event. So the irony is, you know, it's like Halloween's great when it lands on a Friday or a Saturday, but this year May the 4th is actually on a Sunday, but we we're doing our event on May the 3rd.
This isn't the first time you've done an event like this, right?
No, actually last year was the you know, was the first event. It went pretty well as far as I was concerned. A lot of people are you know, they come in, and I gotta admit, it's most fun because the parents are kind of passing on the lore of Star Wars. You know,
are you expecting people to come dressed up?
Well, I mean, it would be great if they do. Actually, last year I was giving out a discount for anybody that wore Star Wars paraphernalia for the tours, and surprisingly, not a hat or T-shirt, but wow. You know, yeah. So
surprising.
Yeah, last year I was walking by, and the kids were at the Sarlacc Pit game, and you know, they're trying to fish out Empire credits and such. And the kids was having fun, but it was the father who was most excited. He's like, okay, so you know why this is important? Because this was the Sarlacc Pit, and you know, this is where Boba Fett supposedly died. And like, you know, he was just giving them all the backstory, you know? So it was the father that was pretty jazzed about it more than the kid, but it's a fun time.
That sounds so, so fun. And hopefully you'll get somebody dressed as a Wookiee for the kids.
Yeah, hopefully. I don't know how rainy it is. Wet fur might not be the best idea, but you know, we do have an Ewok who's already started showing concerns of wet fur. So,
you know, the summer season is approaching. Many people are probably planning on going out. What do you have in store for the season? Are you planning on more events like these for the summer?
Well, the Pinebush UFO Fair. It's kind of an entire weekend of events. And you know, it starts with a kickoff on, you know, the fair itself is on Saturday, June 7th, but the kickoff is actually Friday, June 6th. You know, so many people do come. Last year we had enough events going on that we actually had people that will make plans to stay the whole weekend, you know? So, I mean, an exorbitant amount, but you know, some people are like, yeah, we're in for the weekend, and they just did everything, you know, so that was pretty cool.
So you're expecting like a surge within the coming weeks of people coming and visit?
Well, I mean, just for the fact that our 2025 Pinebush UFO Speaker Conference, our keynote speaker is Nick Pope, and it's very interesting that like people that are even like a little bit outside of the regular, you know, UFO community are like, oh, that guy, you know, it's that they've seen him on Ancient Aliens. He's been all over the History Channel. And so, yeah, so he's been pretty recognizable to the point that people are like, oh, he's going to be here. Like, I just got the tickets up today. And people have been bugging me for a week about, you know, getting the tickets. So, you know, so that's going to be on the evening of June 7th. The kickoff event is also pretty interesting. We have a War of the Worlds radio show and dinner, and it's basically kind of a theatrical presentation of what had happened in 1938 with Orson Welles. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
So what was really ironic, I know that I mentioned Linda Zimmerman, you know, a little bit back there. She actually, we have a small video that's going to be presented there. Her grandfather was one of the people that ran out into the streets with his shotgun that night, expecting to fight off Martians. So we thought that was pretty fantastic that it was that connected to us. So, but yeah, there's all kinds of things, going on. And see, so there's, of course, the actual, fair is, on the 7th. It's 10 to 4. And, you know, there's like a ton of vendors, a lot of food, musical entertainment. We have our alien beauty pageant, and basically a costume contest. People show up and, you know, trying to vie for a prize there. We have our Pine Bush UFO and paranormal game show. So people can test their trivia with their paranormal knowledge. And then, but even Sunday, we got a lot of stuff going on too. We have our Alien Toss Hoedown. It's a community barbecue pig roast. It's actually with sponsored by Bex. And so that's going to be a big community dinner and there's games. There's going to be a pony, which is pretty cool. Pony, right?
It's shaping up to be a really interesting summer for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and busy. Very busy.
Lance, I know the museum has become a famous attraction in the town, mainly because of UFO enthusiasts and I dare say also Star Wars fans. How would you say the town has benefited from the UFO museum and the annual UFO parade? Is there something you see different since you started doing it?
Well, the parade is no longer with us, but you know, the fair still exists. I mean, since I started the museum, I've just noticed like every year the crowds get denser and denser. As more people learn about it, you know, some people go to it annually. So yeah, I mean, it's really benefited each other, through the whole process because, you know, the museum started because of the fair. And then when people go to the museum, some people have come in and they didn't even know about the fair. So then, you know, that's kind of our little preamble that we do, you know, so that people actually understand how this all happened. So then people find it very interesting that, you know, there was initially four people that had started the UFO fair way back when. This is the 14th annual UFO fair. And now, you know, it's under the auspice of the town, both the fair and the museum. So it's kind of like a fun little, you know, history component, you know, as far as how this all happened.
Lance, for those in our audience who want to know more details, do you have any social media that you might want to share so people can get to know the museum better?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, pinebushmuseum.com is the stop, you know, to go get tickets and such. You know, there's a little info there. I mean, most of the information is inside the museum. People will also call regularly, we will actually give them just a, like a little, because they're always like, well, what's in there, you know, what can we expect and everything, you know, so we kind of parse them through as far as, you know, what's in our gallery, gallery one, what's in our paranormal section. If they do the guided tour, we actually have some haunted artifacts that were provided by Linda Zimmerman and Mary Jo Chudley from Penn Paranormal. We have new exhibits, that were put together like within the next few weeks, actually prior to the museum, prior to the UFO fair.
Lance from UFO Museum, thank you so much for being here with us in Radio Catskill. I hope you have a great May the 4th weekend.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Liberty, I'm Miguel Santiago Colón for Radio Catskill.
And that's it for the local edition. We'll be back on Monday. We do this all over again. Thank you to all our guests for this evening. Check out our website at wjffradio.org. You can see all the interviews we have done this past week, listen to the podcast, and most importantly, sign up for our newsletter. And don't forget to take our survey on our website that talks about what happened with the executive order from Donald Trump. Just a reminder, if you're just tuning in, President Trump has signed an executive order instructing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to end all federal funding for NPR and PBS, citing what he calls the radical left bias in their coverage. So we have a survey right now on our website that asks you, what would the loss of NPR program mean to you? I've been your host, Patricio Roballo. Lucy, have a good night. Everyone else, take care, and I'll talk to you soon. And Sunday, again, is Star Wars Day, so may the 4th be with you.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.